This podcast is brought to you by the Dutch media platform Triathlon Inside.
1, 2, 3, 4.
What is up, guys, and welcome back to a new podcast show of Grit Grind Girona, the show where we dive deep into the stories behind resilience, transformation, and the power of movement to change lives. Today's guest has lived through the highs of collegiate athletics and the lows of losing a sense of identity, only to come back stronger, faster, and more grounded than ever. After playing university basketball on a scholarship, he found himself navigating life after sport, with all the physical and emotional challenges that come with it. But through struggle, he found purpose, and through a single spin class, he rediscovered the power of movement. Since then, he lost over 22 kilograms, became a passionate cyclist, and dedicated himself to sharing his journey to inspire others, especially in underserved communities, to take control of their health and happiness. Now, from his new home in Girona, Spain, he's using his bike to explore the world and help others do the same. And hey, if you ever find yourself in Girona, keep your eyes open, because you might just spot him on the bike, looking sharp with his change, always the style on point, and giving off some seriously cool vibes. Please welcome to the show, Calvin Smith.
Hello, hello.
Calvin.
And that was pretty good, dude.
Yeah, you liked it?
Yeah, you wrote that?
Yeah, well, yeah. Some ChatGPT here and there, but nice. For sure, it's... yeah, welcome. How are you doing?
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm good. I'm tired.
Yeah.
I just did a 3-hour ride.
Nice.
Today.
All right.
So we finally got some cooler temps.
Yeah, especially we're like the 8th of July right now. And last week especially was really, really hot.
Brutal.
This week is a little bit nicer, of course. But what time do you like? Whatever time did you leave today then?
Now, today, I mean, I usually like to leave around 10, 10:30, 11 maybe if I'm moving extra slow.
But it could be really hot already. Yeah,
yeah? Like during the summer in Girona, it's not really feasible to leave at that time.
Yeah.
Especially once we get into June, July. So now that we had some rain yesterday, I was able to get out at my usual time. But
nice.
Like we were talking about earlier, during the summer, I usually switch to leaving at 7 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah.
Just more for the sunset vibes.
Where did you go today?
Today, I just did like reverse Els or Hincapie Loop.
Nice.
Over Santa Paella. A little bit of Libisbal and then over the backside of Els, which I don't enjoy, but I did.
Cool. All right. Well, again, welcome to the show. Thanks for taking some time. I already explained a little bit just before we started, but what I would like to do in the podcast is, get to know you. And we are going to be starting off with a quick fire question about getting to know you. Afterwards, I think it's cool to be talking a little bit about where you come from and eventually how you ended up in Girona. Doing some quick fire questions about Girona as well, and then we'll see you from there. So are you ready for the first round?
Yeah, let's do it. I think so.
What has been, until now, your proudest achievement
in life? Or
yeah.
I would think it's not even sports related, just graduating
For sure.
From college. I think something that made, you know, I was not really like a person that was super focused on my studies, and it was a long journey. And I remember just like my grandma, my grandfather, my mom, like pushing me to accomplish this goal because it's not something that's normal, quote unquote, in my family. Mm-hmm. And by the time I was able to graduate, like grind through it, balancing basketball studies and graduate on the dean's list. And I think like that was probably the proudest achievement personally in my life. And I just remember like how proud my grandma was after everything she did to help me get through. So that I would say finishing college, getting my degree.
Cool. Nice. Well, that's a good achievement, right?
Yeah.
Nice. What language do you speak?
Do
you speak something else?
I speak English and hablo un poco de castellano también, pero nice. Catalan, not yet. But I'm starting my classes in September of Catalan, so.
Cool. Nice.
How about you?
I'm speaking Dutch, obviously. English, we get to learn English quite early on. And then you can choose in like school, you can choose between French or German, because that's like close to Netherlands. So I did at the beginning a couple of both. And well, since I moved to Girona, started to learn a little bit of Castellano. But Catalan is something different.
Tough. So you have five languages
then. Yeah, well, I think like French, German, and Castellano, Spanish. It's like you can like try to say what you mean and these kind of things, but like different, how do you say it, like the past time or these kind of things.
Yeah.
That's something we're working on, you know?
Same.
But I think, yeah, you can eventually, you can at least try to understand and try to, like, if you go to a barbershop or whatever, you know, and they don't speak English.
Right.
Girona, actually, a lot of international things, of course, but it's cool too, especially if you live somewhere abroad or a different place than where you're from, that you can, yeah, at least try to learn the language where you're living. So
yeah, absolutely. That's actually one thing I appreciate about, like, Europeans is how many languages you guys know. I mean, even locally, Catalans or Spaniards, they will know. I was talking to one of my friends yesterday. It was Catalan. He speaks English, Catalan, Castellano, Japanese,
wow,
and like one other language. And that's not something that's common in the States at all.
No, true. Is there one person you look up to for inspiration?
In life?
Yeah, could be everything.
Now I would say there's nobody in particular. But when I was younger, like, I really looked up to my older cousin. He's like a big brother to me.
Nice.
Really mentored me a lot, so.
Is he much older than you?
He's probably like 4 or 5 years older than me, not by much. So, yeah, he was somebody who really motivated me to, like, play basketball, try to get a scholarship, graduate, all these things. So I would say my older cousin, Justin, is who I used to look up to or still do, but it's not like as much. I guess I'm quote-unquote my own man now, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I would say him.
Okay, nice. What's your favorite movie?
Man, this is difficult because I don't, I am so bad at movies.
Oh, yeah?
And actors and actresses. But I would say probably my favorite movie just off the top of the head is American Gangster. I like anything that's, it sounds really bad, but anything that has to do with drug cartel, selling drugs. So the Godfather series, I remember just watching that an entire weekend, binge watching that.
How many times have you watched it?
I think twice, because those are some long movies. Yeah. The Godfather series. Anything with Denzel, but yeah, I just like anything that, I think I like the business side of it more so than the product that they're selling. I've never sold drugs or anything like that, but it's just like, just the empires that they're able to build. And it's oftentimes a story from somebody who has nothing and they're making it to, you know, to a high level in life where they're able to buy things and support people and these types of things. So I think it's that aspect of it and then running the business that really like catches my attention.
Yeah, cool. You've been, I think, and I'm not sure if you do still right now, but especially in the last couple of years, you've done some cycling events.
Yeah.
Is there an event you really would really like to do still?
Like this super aspirational side of me, I would say like a Trans-Pyrenees would be cool. Just for the physical challenge.
The Trans-Pyrenees.
Trans-Pyrenees, yeah. Something like that.
Wow, that's cool.
Or an ultra distance event, just because I know I'm not really, I don't like to be on the bike past 5 hours. So I know I would get into some pretty dark places doing something like that. Mm-hmm. Or even the Madrid to Barcelona ride that they have here.
Oh, cool.
In Spain.
I don't know.
I think it happens in June.
How many cases is that, you know?
What's that?
How many cases is that? That's
I'm not sure. Long. It's a long one.
Yeah.
But something like that I would like to do just to kind of, I feel like events like that, you find out a lot about yourself, go to some dark places.
Yeah.
But I really need to build up the mental fortitude to like embark on a journey like that.
You've been talking a little bit about already, and we're for sure going to be talking more about it. So I probably know the answer already, but what is your favorite sport outside of cycling?
Oh, man. Now,
Yeah, it can be different.
Yeah,
now
it's
sure.
different. Outside of cycling, I love American football. I have not been able to get into football here, which is soccer in America.
Have you watched the quarterback on Netflix?
No. What is that?
It's a show about like a quarterback and they really follow like four or five different athletes. First season was like Mahomes and these kind of guys, you know, and it's really cool to like what I try to do with this podcast, for example, but to see what the athletes are mostly outside of the games,
yeah.
you know, and see their struggles and their dedication towards the training. And it's a pretty cool thing.
I'll have to check that out.
Yeah.
So yeah, American football. And then I like tennis. It's just fast paced and like it's a game that requires a lot of athleticism, also thinking and strategy too, like mm-hmm. on your feet really, really rapidly. I like tennis. Golf, I can get into. I wouldn't say it's like my favorite, but basketball now, I'm not so much into it as I was when I was younger, just because I feel like it's a totally different game now than what I grew up on. But
oh, yeah?
Yeah, I would say that's probably the sports I enjoy most outside of cycling now.
Cool. Nice. If you could train with any athlete in history, could be any sport, who would it be?
Easily Kobe Bryant. Kobe Bryant, just because the mentality, the outlook on life he had, and incorporate that into his training, I feel like I would be able to learn a lot from him if I had the opportunity to train with him. And I feel like, I mean, if you've never watched any of his speeches or anything, it's definitely worth checking out, even if you're not into basketball, because you can implement his mentality into a lot of the training that you're doing for whatever sport you're into or just life in general. So mm-hmm. I would say Kobe Bryant.
Cool. Are you more of an early bird or night owl?
Night owl, I would say. But I can be a morning person, man. Like we talked about earlier, I do like riding in the evening. But if you can get up like around 5:30 or 6 at the latest, and then you get out and you're doing something active, there's really no other feeling like just being out there solo. You feel like you're getting a head start on the day, on other people. But I would say probably I'm a night out, so I'm not going to bed until like 12 o'clock most nights, 11:30, 1 maybe.
Mm-hmm. Enjoying the Spanish dinner times.
Yeah, well, I can't get into the Spanish dinner, man. Have you been able to do it?
Well, we're like having dinner at like most of the times like 8:30 or 9.
Same.
But that usually the Spanish people are eating actually later at that.
Yeah, I tried it when I first moved and I just can't. Like eating at 11, 10:30 even before bed, is just my body's not accustomed to it.
If you could visit any country in the world tomorrow, where would you go?
Ethiopia. Ethiopia's on my list of places to visit.
Why? Really,
man, just so much history. Being African American, really, like, I feel like that is a place I really want to visit. And it's interesting with a lot of African Americans, we don't know what part of Africa we are from because of the slave trade. Mm-hmm. Atlantic slave trade. So, but Ethiopia, there was Emperor Haile Selassie, who was the last emperor of Ethiopia. Ethiopia has never been colonized by a European country. So just think it'd be really cool to go there, connect with the people, like check out the place. And yeah, like Ethiopia, I would say.
I think it's big sporting community over there as well.
Yeah.
Especially with the runners, of course.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of good runners coming out of Africa in general, and then cyclists now too.
For sure. If you're out there on your bike, or nowadays some running actually as well, do you listen to any music or podcast during your training?
On the bike, I don't. When I first started, I did, but I felt like it was just kind of dangerous. And then also, I feel like you get it more into the zen when you can hear nature and the birds chirping and stuff. Mm. When I run, I do play music. I don't have headphones yet, at least, but I don't know. I feel like the running, since it's a shorter duration than riding the bike, a little bit of music helps me like keep your tempo high and get through the workout quicker.
Nice.
Yeah.
You prefer training or going outside for the, with other people or on your own?
I love people, but I love being alone more, man. I like to be alone, just in my thoughts, thinking about life or whatever challenges that I'm facing at the time, trying to solve issues. Also, it's just like a place where I'm able to think about, create like what I want to do creatively. So I would say alone.
Nice. Last question. What's one thing on your bucket list?
Man, I think I'm doing it. Living in Spain. Yeah. And yeah. Trying to make this a long-term thing. Quitting my corporate job. That was a bucket list item. So. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's a thing that a lot of people always dream about.
Right.
But it's always like, how do you say, it's like... you don't know what's it like on the other side or these kind of things. And a lot of people stay in their thing they're used to because it's the safe place, right?
Yep, yep.
And it's a cool thing. You've done it, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I would say that, I mean, I'm living my bucket list item.
Nice. Well, thanks for the answer so far. And it's been interesting already. But to get to know you a little bit better, like... You told me you're from San Diego, right?
San Diego, Diego.
That's where you've been living all the times before you were moving to Girona? Or
I grew up in San Diego, and I've lived in Oregon, Arizona, and I've been to other places in the States, obviously, but San Diego is home.
Nice.
Yeah.
How did sports first come into your life?
Man, it's hard to remember, like... the first moment it entered my life, but I've been playing sports since I can remember, maybe 4 or 5 years old. When I was younger, I played everything, soccer, basketball, baseball, football, skateboard. I was into rollerblading.
That's a lot of
everything,
things.
Everything, man. We were very active, me and my friends, very active. This is before, obviously, like, Instagram and cell phones existed, so I had to be home before the street lights came on, and that was basically, we stayed out until that happened and got home, and just like each day was something different. So I would say like 4 or 5 years old is when different sports started entering my life.
Cool. Nice. And you went on to play like basketball at university level eventually. Yeah, back then, especially, like, really your dream to become, like, a pro in basketball?
My dream was to play on the collegiate level. And it wasn't a dream that was always, like, I didn't feel like it was attainable for me. Like, I actually had to work really, really hard to get there. And throughout high school, I didn't get a lot of playing time at all. And essentially, I averaged like 7 minutes of playing time per game. And then I had to work my ass off to get a scholarship on the university level. And that's like, like I mentioned earlier, my older cousin, he, I remember just asking him one time, like, man, do you think I could play on the collegiate level? And he told me, yeah. And I was like, okay, well, I know my cousin wouldn't bullshit me, you know. if I was trash, he would tell me, no, you ain't got a shot, do something else. So I just grinded it out, man, and I ended up being the only player from my high school team that got a basketball scholarship.
Wow.
And I think, like, what a lot of people, I guess, their relationship with cycling, I guess, especially in this town, like, people trying to be privateers or professionals, like, I feel like I've already achieved that with basketball. It was a job year-round, and...
Well, as you mentioned, you were the only one from high school. It's like that's really like massive achievement already. You know,
it's
a scholarship, I think.
Yeah, it's a huge achievement. Excuse me, and it's not easy. And once you're there, it's they're paying you to basically put on shoes, and you have to stay in shape. You have to hit the weight room. You have to, you know, keep improving too to keep your role on the team.
What age was this?
When I was in university, I would say my early 20s.
Okay, yeah.
So
is it also a strange moment in time? It's like you're in a team with other people from your age, and you feel like a team because you win as a team, right?
Right.
But they're all as well, like, how do you say it? Like competitors, right? Because everybody in that team, everybody eventually has like the dream to get further or to get higher up and this kind of thing. So it's a strange thing, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you have to like, you have to balance all that because there are, I mean, I was the captain of my team too. You have to understand what each one of your teammates' ambitions are. And there are people who I played with that went on to play professionally at different levels. And yeah, each person has their own personal ambitions, but again, you need to be able to succeed as a team, because if the team is not doing well, then
there's no interest in
A little bit harder for you to do well personally and go on up to the next stage. And each stage that you're trying to reach, it gets harder and harder to get to that level. There's a lot of professional leagues in Europe and like outside of the NBA, and that's where a lot of my teammates were, or some of my teammates, I'll say, were trying to get to.
Actually, Girona has a pretty big club.
Yeah,
in Spain for sure. Basketball is pretty big. Yeah.
So there's a lot of different leagues that you can play in, but once you're in that level, like, it's a whole nother world. And to be recognized by one of the club teams in Europe, it's very, very difficult. Okay. And because you got to think, like, a basketball team has maybe 15 spots.
People in the roster, yeah.
Yeah.
That's not a lot.
It's not a lot of, it's not a lot of opportunity, no.
And it's also, I think, especially with the leagues in Europe, it's like a lot of times people from the NBA go over.
It can happen, like older players who maybe they played in the NBA and then they go to Europe and they extend their careers that way.
Is it, because you just told me that you're, like more somebody who likes to do like going out on her own. Was it tough to be in a team?
No, because like it's, I guess one thing that's similar to being on the bike is when you go to the gym and get up shots. I mean, I think we would have like, we want to get up 1,000 shots a day in the gym, you know?
Wow.
So
that's a lot.
You got to go to the gym every day. I remember these machines we have. Basically, you shoot, the machine gets the ball out of the net and passes it back to you. So you spend a lot of time on your own in the gym, outside of practice, obviously. In practice, you're with your teammates, but you're doing that or you're in the weight room alone. You might be with your friend, like similar to the bike, one of your teammates where you guys go do this together, but you do have a lot of similar alone time, especially when it's off season, quote unquote. When you're back home, you still have to be in the gym, still have to be lifting weights. So that's a lot of alone time as well.
Eventually, at a certain time, I think a couple of years later than that, I think you started to get some less time on the field, I think, playing some less time. And as I read somewhere online that you also had a little bit of trouble with like the I don't want to say like the amount of training, but like to really get like the schedule of the training regime and these kind of things, right? Is that the moment in time where it's like the maybe love for basketball or like the desire to go further or whatever maybe disappeared a little bit?
No, I was, for me, like I mentioned earlier, my goal was, my dream was to play collegiate basketball.
Yeah.
And it's a job. So I would say by the time I was a senior in college, because you have to understand, you have to go work out when you don't want to work out. You have to do certain things that the coach may want you to do that you don't feel like doing, or maybe you don't feel it as best. So when you're doing something like this over a number of years, training in off season, running, like it just, to me, it got to a point where I'm like, I don't want to work out because I don't feel like it. You know what I mean? Like that's
basically, probably you started out because you liked the game.
Yeah.
And eventually, if it's becoming a job,
Yeah.
It's a different feeling.
It's a different feeling. And I think anytime that happens in whatever sport you're engaged in, like, it might be time to step away, you know? But obviously, I wanted to see my dream through. And I didn't really start feeling this way until I was a senior in college. And I think it's because by that point, I had already achieved what I wanted to achieve with this sport. I mean, I'm grateful for basketball. Like I mentioned to you, I was able to go to, like, Europe and play basketball for a little bit, just in a tournament. Mm-hmm. Visit different cities.
It was in Amsterdam, games.
Right? Yeah, I believe it was around Amsterdam. It wasn't in Amsterdam, but... So yeah, by the time I was a senior and then after I graduated, I'm like, man, I need to, I guess decompress is the word for it. So yeah. And that's when I like started getting overweight and all this stuff.
Yeah. I guess what the next phase is, I think in your life is like, you've been until that point so active in your life, you know, since you were 4 or 5 years old,
yeah.
You started out doing exercising and sports and all kind of different things, and suddenly, like the basketball is done, it's over. And then, and what kind of transition did you go through, like emotionally and mentally and also physically at that point?
Yeah, you know? It was hard, man. Like, I think anybody who's done any type of sport for, I mean, let's say what, I played for over 20 years just in total, not through college, I'm just saying my lifetime. And then all of a sudden, it's over. Like, you don't have to go to the gym tomorrow, or you don't have to do that workout that you didn't want to do, or maybe that you wanted to do, but you're not really doing it for a reason, you know? Mm-hmm. So now all of a sudden, 30 hours that I was committing or whatever it is per week to this thing, I have that 30 or whatever hours of free time. And physically it's like, okay, my entire life I looked a certain way because I'm always active. I'm always playing some sport. I'm always burning calories. And now I'm not doing what I was doing anymore. So now my physique is changing. So now I feel like you kind of... I guess lose yourself, or you go into an introspective journey and like, well, who am I, you know, outside of this thing that I've committed 20 plus years of my life to. And so that starts to affect, or at least for me, it started to affect me mentally. Like, man, I'm overweight now. I've never been this heavy in my life. I think I got up to like 215 pounds or whatever, which I don't know in kilos what that is. Or kilograms. But I'm just like, man, who is this guy? And
did it go fast?
I would say it happened over the duration of a couple of years, like a year or two. And
well, especially I think is when you just stopped with basketball at the beginning, you know, the first couple of months, you think, it's all right, no worries, these kind of things. But eventually, over like 2 or 3 years,
yeah,
that's a big difference, right?
Yeah. And I would say, too, one of the things I realized is that nutritionally, I had no idea what the hell I was doing, you know? I think I was able to eat whatever I wanted for years because it didn't matter, mm-hmm. you know? So if you're eating pizzas and drinking beers and stuff and you're not exercising or whatever it may be, that stuff's going to catch up to you, and that changes who you are or how you feel. So yeah, that's when I started to get like depressed and not really know like what am I doing. And then I found cycling, not because I thought it was a cool sport or anything, just through a spin class because I didn't like to run. I guess now like we talked about, I do trail running sometimes, but I didn't want to run on a treadmill or outside. So I saw.
Can't imagine why.
Yeah,
the treadmills for sure.
It's just super boring, you know. Yeah. It's not stimulating, mentally stimulating. But then I tried the spin class, and I was just like, I remember the instructor being like, "Oh, you just burned 500 calories." I'm like, man, at the time, I'm like, dang, 500 calories, that's a lot.
That's a lot,
you know. Yeah. And that was what, in an hour. But
those spinning classes are pretty fun, actually.
Yeah, right?
The music, and then it's hard work.
Right.
It's hard work.
So I was like, man, let me try to get a bike. And I remember I got a single speed from State Bicycles. It's American bike company. It was like $500 or something like that. And then the first ride I would do outside, because I wanted to see what it was like. I was like, oh, shit, I remember. Like, I used to ride my bike all the time when I was a kid. I totally forgot about this, you know? Mm-hmm. So then I got a road bike because I wanted to go longer. And the transition was very... I didn't really dive in with open arms because I didn't, one, want to wear tights. Like, that was a huge thing for me. And I was like, man, I don't want to wear those. So I used to wear basketball shorts. Then I bought the mountain bike compression shorts to put under the basketball shorts because, you know, after 20 miles, it's just not as physically, physically impossible to do longer than that. And then...
What was the riding like? Was this in San Diego?
No, I was in Phoenix at the time, living in Phoenix, Arizona at the time.
I think Arizona is pretty okay for riding a bike, right?
Yeah, it's a lot of good riding, Scottsdale. So yeah, I got the tights. Another thing, I was like, man, this sport is expensive. So I was buying all this like entry level kit, which is fine. I
mean, for sure, yeah.
Get you on the bike. It's more comfortable than basketball shorts. So it was just like little baby steps before I got to just like fully all in, confident wearing Lycra and all this stuff.
Was it just one step back, but was it difficult for you to like in these years after basketball to, as you said, like it was your job at that point to like you get in some sort of like how we say it, like a gap, for example, you know, you don't know, as you just mentioned, you don't know what's next or what's in life. Was it difficult to like also in these years in between when you first started out with cycling, was it like tough to like find a new goal or new thing to do in life, or to find work, because basically you have been like your job was basketball, right?
Yeah, no, I think when I first found cycling, I was able to tap in with some communities out there in Phoenix, but I guess it kind of like reactivated the athlete within me. I knew that, so I was very, very curious about the sport. One, from the training aspect, with nutrition and all this, and then the competitive side of it. I didn't even know like crit racing or road racing was a thing. Mm. I'd never heard of this, you know.
It's big in US.
Yeah. Crit racing. Yeah. I mean, it's not a mainstream sport. Mm. Like, cycling's not a mainstream sport in the States. So I didn't even know like criterium racing was a thing. So I got into that a little bit. Road races too. And I was like, oh, wow, like it was really intriguing to me. So I started to dive into that, learn about the competitive side of things, the different races, Tour de France, obviously, but like the races outside of that, the different riders, how you become better and stronger on the bike. I really started to dive into the strategy I knew because playing basketball, a lot of people just see the players running up and down the court, but there's strategy in basketball as well. So I knew there had to be the same thing in cycling. People aren't just out here riding a bike and winning just because by luck, you know. So I started to learn more about that. So it was, I guess, the shiny new toy for me to kind of transfer all the things I had learned from basketball into this new thing and kind of like, all right, well, I'm going to use this to get in shape. I'm going to try to challenge myself to ride more and more. I'll do some competitive stuff like the criterium racing, see how I do with that, if I'm any good. So it was good at really like, I guess, reawakening the athlete within me. And yeah, it's been great.
Yeah. How did like getting back into movement, into cycling eventually, impact not just your your body physically, of course, you're losing weight. But how did it also like affect your mind?
yeah, like physically, I lost over 50 pounds. So I knew I was onto something there, and it reawakened my mind because it's just something that I realized that I could commit myself to for the long term. And before I even got into cycling, I just thought about this right now. I remember I went to like a doctor visit and ironically enough, my doctor at the time was into trail running, and he was telling me, and I was still overweight and out of shape at this time. He's like, yeah, I'm just not into, he said, you just haven't found what that thing that you're into yet as an adult. And cycling is happened to be that thing that I was able to, you know, reawaken the inner athlete within me. Well, funny enough, it was like at the time when he told me about trail running, I had no interest in trail running. But now I trail run and I love it. So it's just like funny how that happened. But he was right, yeah. So, yeah, physically I had changed. Mentally started feeling better about myself the more, one, the weight started to drop, but also just exercising in general is scientifically proven to combat depression, anxiety, all these things. So I felt better as a person, and it felt like something I could actually commit myself to long term. So,
yeah. What's, before we move on, like, when was this around that you started out with cycling?
2017, I believe, is when I started riding.
Short while ago. Eh? Well, yeah. 8 years, it's going fast, of course, but it's still pretty young or new.
Yeah. Right? Still new, still learning.
What was it for you like, as you said, you were in Phoenix at that moment of time. Were there a lot of, was it easy to, you mentioned already the crits and these kind of things, was it easy to like find other people to connect with or to like, were there like different communities out there or?
Yeah, I mean, I think, so the group rides are one where I met a lot of people in the group rides. I think that's one of the things that's great about the bicycle is just the different people you meet. I mean, like even you and I doing this podcast now, we met through the bicycle. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sport has a great way of connecting people who may not connect outside of it, you know? So I was able to meet a lot of great people that way. And through the group rides, then they started telling me about the racing that happened in Phoenix. And that's when I really started to get into it and training and trying to get better, trying to get stronger on the bike. So, yeah, that's how I got into it.
How did you end up in Girona?
Girona.
You mentioned you were here since 2 years, two and a half years-ish.
Yeah, so I've been in Girona for 2 years, but I didn't come to Girona for a lot of the reasons that people come to Girona for, you know, to be a privateer or... Mm-hmm. Or maybe they're professional cyclists. Cycling was a part of the reason why I moved here, but in the sense that I had done a lot of research on the roads here. My original first choice was to move to Portugal, but I had found out that the riding there wasn't ideal from a safety standpoint. Mm-hmm. Have you ridden there before, Portugal?
I went for a race close to Lisbon.
Okay.
Lisboa. But other than that, no, not really. And at that place, it was okay. But I think it was a really sport-minded place as well.
Okay.
So no other places in Portugal. But for sure, over here, it's good.
Yeah,
riding,
yeah, yeah.
Riding on roads, huh?
Yeah. So cycling was a part of the reason that the infrastructure, I should say. Then I have friends that lived here already. So I felt like that would help me tap into my community straight away. Mm-hmm. The climate was another thing. Being from San Diego, we don't have seasons in San Diego, and it's like perfect temperature year round. So I did some research and saw that Spain in general has a similar climate to Southern California, Portugal as well. So that's why those were higher on my list. But I was also looking at like Colombia, Argentina, Uruguay, like different spots just to see where I wanted to. Mm-hmm. To end up in, but Girona ended up obviously winning. But I don't know if Girona will be the long term home for me. But I do enjoy living here.
What was the reason? And I think that's 2 years ago now. Did you move out of US, out of the States?
Man, several reasons.
You already mentioned that you're living your bucket list thing, right?
Yeah.
That's for sure one thing. But yeah.
I would just say, like, personally, I wasn't happy. Professionally, I was doing great. Like, I had achieved a lot of the goals that I set forth for myself. I was in sales. I finished as the number one sales person in my company the year that I left, but I wasn't happy with just like the lifestyle of, I don't think it's like a, I know we have to have jobs, we all have to work, but it didn't sit well with me that I have to give a company, let's say 65 years of my life, and each year I get 2 weeks off, 2.5 if I'm lucky, and 1.5 days a week of me time, because Friday I feel like is like Friday and Sunday we're preparing for the week or we're decompressing for the week. Saturday is really the only day that we have off technically. So it really got to a point where I was just affecting my mental health. Had a lot of anxiety, depression. And then in 2020, when the pandemic happened, I was just like, it made me realize how short life is and how quickly, whether you're healthy or not, life can be over in an instant. And I was hyper aware to like the way we as Americans acted towards each other in times of crisis. And it didn't really sit well with me how we were behaving mm-hmm. in many respects. So I was just like, I want to move to a place where, one, I want to be able to actually live my life, you know, because who knows how long I'll be here or be alive. So I want to actually gain more experiences. That's, to me, that's true wealth. I was making the most money I ever had in my life at the time. It's like, but I don't feel like I'm living, I'm enjoying life. Like, since I've left, I feel like I'm actually experiencing life and enjoying life. And I want to be in a place where people aren't hyper-focused on work, per se, where the culture isn't work, work, work. It's more family-focused or relationship-focused, I would say. And I think that Spanish people or Catalan people are really family-oriented or community-oriented, and I really like that. And I want to try to, you know, pave a path or create a lifestyle where I can still work, but I still have the opportunity to live and experience life. And yeah, that's what made me leave, basically.
And that's been 2 years already.
2 years now.
How you like it so far?
I love it, man. I think like Europe is so different. Spain is so different than the States in a lot of ways, positive things. Like, I mean, from a security standpoint, like you don't have to worry about shootings in cafes or grocery stores. Like, to me, the people, unless you live in the States, it's not really like, that's something that you have to be hyper alert in a lot of the places that you are at in the States. But here you don't have that. Not that bad things don't happen here, but it's just a different flavor, I should say, I guess, maybe. Mm-hmm. But I love it. Mental health has gone up tremendously, and I think that's really important. Yeah, weather's good. The food could be better. Food's okay, but it's healthier, so it's a trade-off.
I wanted to say already, like, yeah. Is there something you're missing from back home?
Man, I miss the shit food from the States, honestly. our food has, like, we have, America is unique in the aspect that people are from all over the world live in America. And that's not like any other place in the world, definitely not like Girona. I mean, I grew up around Korean people, Mexican people, Black people, white people, Mexicans, you know. So with that, you get a melting pot. You get to try cuisine from different cultures. You get to understand different cultures in general, how people live, different customs they have when you enter their home. So it was really, really beneficial from that point. And then also just the food, like our fast food. Burgers, I talk about this with my friend. I feel like Americans, we do burgers right. I've yet to find a burger in Spain that matches an American burger. But the food is healthier here, so it's like it's a positive trade-off.
All right. Well, since we're talking about it already, about Girona, let's dive into the second round of quick fire questions about Girona. Starting off with, since when you're ill, you already told me, since when are you living in Girona? It's been 2 years now.
2 years, yeah.
2 years. What's your favorite place for coffee in Girona?
I have a few, but I would say any place that's like, the specialty coffee places are fine, but I prefer just the local cafeterias where Catalans are hanging out. The coffee may not be the best. Just the everyday, I guess, working Catalan goes to have a coffee, talk, hang out. Those are my favorite spots in town. Especially like outside of Girona, I would say, like in the small pueblos. Yeah, places like that are my favorite.
You get to spot some cool cafes here and there when you're out on your bike, eh? And through these small villages,
yeah,
here and there. There are some pretty nice places out there.
Yeah, there's a lot. I think doesn't Spain have the most cafes per capita? Most cafes and bars per capita, I think.
Could be, yeah.
Yeah, in the world. I think that's a thing.
All right.
Yeah.
Oh, might be possible. We have to check that out.
Yeah.
What is your favorite bike loop over here?
My favorite bike loop, I will say San Hilari. I think this might be controversial, but I think San Hilari, my friend Will showed me San Hilari when I first got here. I think San Hilari loop is better than Hincapie loop. And I feel like Hincapie loop gets all the like pub or PR for the cycling tours that come.
Yeah.
But San Hilari loop, cause just, and I go up through the Ozor side, come down the other side.
Yeah, exactly.
That's my favorite
loop,
I would say. That or I do a Ramonia loop. Ramonia, half Ramonia down to Santa Cristina Daro and to Plaza Daro and then back over through Colonja. That's a good, that's one that I do pretty often too. Get a little bit of the coast without a lot of the climbing, like if you went over Sangrao. So
without the busyness,
especially during the summer.
Santa Hilari is nice. It's one of my favorites as well. As you, especially going to Ozor side up.
Yeah.
I actually almost never go the other direction. It's like Ozor down, you know.
I
don't know why, but it's nice. Have you ever been to, when you get to Santa Hilari, to the village over there? Usually you go straight and then back down towards Santa Coloma, I think, right? But have you ever been like at that, in the middle of the village, you can go right and climb a little bit higher? It's super strange if you go outside of the village that like, after like half a K or so, you're suddenly in like a total different environment.
Yeah.
It's pretty strange though. It looks like you're high in the mountains and different trees.
Because you can see Montaigne from there. Yeah,
yeah. Montaigne, yeah.
Yeah, I go that way. If I go to Vic, do a Vic loop.
Cool.
Yeah. Nice. Or the backside through, I like to go through Agresias too. That loop is really nice, like San Hilari, Agresias, and then you're back through Astilis, I think it is. Mm-hmm. That one's a nice one too.
You've been talking a little bit about it already, but do you prefer running on the flat Vias Verdes, or do you like trail running on Els and Gels?
I haven't done a lot of trail running in Els and Gels yet. I've done some at San Daniel, San Miguel. I'll go to Vias Verdes. I have not ran on yet. I've only ridden my gravel bike. But it's pretty it's flat, right?
Mostly flattish. Yeah.
I mean, I would like it, but it's pretty busy too, huh?
It's busy-ish, but it's good to do your workouts, right? Your sessions, because it's flattish, you can do your things. So I actually enjoy it really a lot to be out there, and you can run endlessly, you know? But as we mentioned, trail running is pretty nice over here as well.
Yeah. No, I have to do it because I'm planning to do my first like running training block. Ever.
If you get to some bigger volume as well, you know, doing some trail running up to the top of Els and Gels and back here. There's some pretty cool, you know, we've been riding up Els so many times already on our road bikes.
Yeah.
And there are so many small trails or gravel paths or these kind of things right beside the road.
Yeah.
Which you never know of.
No.
Only whenever you're going there on or you ever ride my bike or running. And it's pretty cool. Yeah. Have you been to a Girona football or basketball game already?
Not yet. On the to-do list. Have you?
To football, yeah, soccer.
Okay.
In U.S. terms, of course, but
football team is good too.
Football
right?
team. Yeah. This year, last season was not so amazing, but the year before they were really, really good. It's pretty cool, especially when I remember that it was. I mean, the 23-24 season when they were so good. Like
yeah.
you can just feel like the whole like town or city was standing behind a team, you know, and it was pretty cool. Yeah. What's your favorite restaurant in Girona?
Oh, my favorite restaurant. I like Taj, the Indian place. There's another one, if I'm in the mood for Indian food, and then Sabores of, I forget what this place is called, but they do Syrian food. It's right next to Taj, actually. Those two, I would say. Or two of my favorites. And then La Regota, I believe is the name of it. That place is the best tapas ever I've ever had. Food is so fresh. I think it's La Regota. Very pricey, but I remember going there and just like my mind was blown at how good the food was.
Nice. There are some restaurants not a lot of people say. It's not like the usual ones. Yeah.
What do you usually hear?
Bartali.
Yeah.
For pizza.
Bartali's good.
It's a nice place. But actually some pretty interesting things. Some people say Sinofos. I have not been yet before. Haku.
Haku. Was it Japanese food?
No, not really. It's a Spanish guy, but it's pretty. I've been to that place a while ago. Pretty nice. Well, you've got a lot of interesting restaurants out there, right?
Yeah, lots of options downtown. Yeah.
What is your favorite thing to do in or around Girona besides exercising, training?
Man, hanging out in the house.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna like going for walks, hanging out with friends. Maybe going to get like some empanadas. But I live a pretty simple life, man. I feel like living in the center. If I want to step out and just people watch, I can do that too. But usually I'm just hanging out. You know how it is. Like if you're training a lot, you're pretty tired. Like I don't really have a lot of energy to be doing a lot of extra stuff.
What do you dislike the most about Girona?
Oh, man, I wouldn't say dislike. But one thing I think, especially like if somebody's expecting to move here or, you know, Girona's not really as quiet as I thought it would be. It's actually like the city center is busier than where I was living in San Diego, the neighborhood I was living in San Diego. So I would say that's a shocker. And I think it's a small town or a small city, but it's big in the aspect that there's always tourism here, whether that be for cycling or just normal tourism. So you do get a lot of, or some of that hustle and bustle vibe, and it's, I mean, pretty much year round.
Mm. And what do you like most about Girona?
I think the nature. Like Catalonia is beautiful, man. I've been here 2 years and I still am in moments. I'm like, man, what the fuck is this place? Like, it's just amazing, especially after it rains. Everything's green. And then the mountains. Like, if you go through Banyoles and you're seeing Rocacorba in the backdrop or Santa Lari, it's just like, this place is amazing.
Yeah. The White Pyrenees tops.
Yeah, that too. When it snows in the Pyrenees, you can see the Pyrenees. It's just, it doesn't feel like a real place, you know? And I feel so lucky to just be able to ride here and experience in that.
Since moving to Spain, to Girona, how has cycling helped you connect with your new home, your new place?
I think, you like we talked about earlier, you meet different people in the community, but more so I feel like I've been able to connect with locals too, as well through the bike, because they oftentimes are curious about, you know, where are you from? Are you a pro? Which I always laugh, like, no, I'm not a pro. But, I mean, that's how people are. They just don't, they don't know any better. How long you been here? They're very curious. And then the more you start going to places, you start establishing new friendships with these people and the locals. So I would say that that's one of the things.
What has been your most unforgettable ride since moving to Girona?
It's a lot, man. We went to, me and my friend Will went to Ripoll. That was, we did an overnight there. But the first time I went there, dropping into the town, that's a whole nother zone that's just like mind-blowing views-wise. You see the Pyrenees, everything's green. I would say that is probably the most memorable ride so far that I've had.
Looking towards the future, well, you've obviously already told me, like, it's a really cool place, Girona, but might not be the one I will be staying for, you know, my life, for example. But do you you've got any cool stuff coming up in the future, in the next couple of months or weeks? You're going to do anything cool?
I really want to go check out Andalusia, Granada, Calpe, Denia. Like, those are all on my to-do list this year.
Yeah.
And if I can, I want to incorporate cycling into that. Maybe, I'm thinking I'll probably just bring my bike with me. Because I think a bikepacking trip would just be, that'd be a lot. And I want to be able to stay for an extended time. But that, and then I want to do my first trail running event this year. Just to try something new.
There are so many.
Yeah.
I'm not really in the world, but I see sometimes some things passing by and blah.
Yeah, there's a lot, man. And I want to, like I said, I want to do my first running training block. I've never done that before in my life. And then see how I can perform at a trail running event.
Cool. Nice. I think last thing.
Then I'll do Sea Otter too. Sorry, I
forgot. Sea Otter. Yeah. That's September, right?
Yeah.
Cool. How long is that?
Well, it depends on what you do. I usually do the road event, which is like a Fondo basically, but you can race it. I mean, it's no different than like a Tracker.
Yeah.
A Tracker is basically a Fondo that people race.
Have you done Tracker?
Not yet. You?
Yeah. I did the 200K this year.
How was it?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. It's I was planning on riding last year. Since last year I have my gravel bike over here, and then in August or September, whenever the registration opens, I was like, oh, I'm just gonna register. I don't know if I've got any other races, you know, soon around that time, but let's just register, then for sure I have a ticket. Then when we came into this season, I saw that 2 weeks after Tracker, I was doing a full Ironman.
Oh, wow.
So I was thinking, like, oh, it might not be the best thing to race Tracker, you know?
Yeah.
Because still, we go on some steep sections and downhills, and it's a race, isn't it?
Yeah.
People like, risk their lives over there. It's like crazy. But I did Santa Val in February, the two-stage race, and that was pretty cool. And then I was thinking, not racing Tracker anymore, but then a friend of mine took my ticket, but eventually he couldn't come anymore suddenly. So I was like, I'm doing this 5-hour training ride on Saturday, or I can do Tracker still.
Yeah.
And I was like, I talked with my coach, and I was like, if I don't race with the pros anymore, but just stick like at back of the first wave from the amateurs, you know, and then see it as a long endurance ride, and not as a race.
Right.
Take as less risks as possible.
Exactly.
Then you still get a long training day out of
it.
So that's what I did.
Nice.
But it was, as I said, interesting, because it's like they arrive as they can win the Tour de France, right? It's something like this. It's yeah, insane the risk they're taking. And what also was pretty funny to see is like, it's a long event. I did the 200K, you have the 100K, you have the 360,
and then right? 560, yeah, right?
Something like 540,
yeah, the extra large.
But even with the 200K, it's an amazing long day. And I remember that all these people, they ride as if it's the finish after 50K. They smash into it like at the beginning at the first Els and Gels hills, and I'm like, what are you guys doing? And I'm like, I was actually pushing harder than I was thinking I would do it, and still everybody was gone, you know.
Right.
And after 80 or 90K, you know, people started dropping back and they were standing still. It's crazy.
Yep.
But
that happens a lot.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. I've done in the States we have Belgian waffle, right?
Right, yeah.
So I've done that twice. But it's not my cup of tea. It's like you're saying, there's a lot of people taking risk. It's a mass start event, like thousands of people. It's different than lining up for a road race where it's limited registrants or criterium. But people like it. It's grown the sport. And true. I think like if you enjoy it, do it.
Yeah.
But it's not for everybody.
Yeah. Last thing we are, would like to talk a little bit about you is like representation of like the Black community in cycling. It's like especially in Girona, you see a couple of Black people on a bike.
Yeah.
But it's not massive over here.
No.
What was it like for you as come be an African American to start out with cycling? That's not something which is pretty usual, right?
No, it's not. For me personally, like I mentioned, I wasn't drawn to the sport because Lance Armstrong or some other professional American rider even because I thought cycling was cool. Mm-hmm. I was drawn to the sport for a completely different reason, which was health, like mm-hmm. trying to get in shape. And then later I was exposed to the racing side of it. And being African-American, oftentimes I am the only Black cyclist in group rides or whatever it may be. Here in Girona, there is a handful of us and from different parts of the world. We're not all American. But that's generally like my experience. This is what my experience has been. It's usually couple of us in the group ride or just myself. There are a lot of African-American cyclists. There's a lot. I think I remember reading a study. It's like African-Americans are actually the second largest demographic of cyclists in America. I think it's around 8 to almost 9%.
Wow.
Of cyclists.
That's a lot.
It's a lot of people.
Yeah.
Millions of people. And this is just encompassing anybody that rides a bike. So depending on also like what part of the country you're in, obviously you're going to see more African-American cyclists if I'm in the South versus Southern California. But it's not, for me, it wasn't something that was cool or I ever thought was cool. For me, when I was younger, what was cool to me was BMX racing. Like if I was gonna ride the bike, it was gonna be to do BMX racing or go ride off road with my friends.
What was your perception of people riding, you know, bikes as a road bike or these kinds of things? But when you were younger,
clowns. Like honestly, you're wearing tights, you're on a bike. It's just not something. I mean, that was my personal perception, but a lot of, I guess, Americans in general, I think they would feel this way. Like we're viewed more of a nuisance, and I'm saying this as a cyclist, like
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
we're not cool, we wear tights, we hold people up in traffic, you know what I mean? It was never something that I thought, man, I want to do that one day when I get older, you know? In America, I feel like the obvious sports are bigger, like football, baseball, basketball, soccer now is growing. There's so many other sports that Americans will play or participate in before cycling's even a thing, especially considering the financial barrier of entry to cycling. Cycling's an expensive sport.
How do you think we can, or people can make cycling, you know, the cycling industry, how can they make cycling more accessible for like the urban and the African-American communities?
It's a good question, a question that gets asked a lot. I think there has to be, one, a desire to achieve that, and that has to be from the companies. I would say it starts at the top, right? So in the marketing departments of the brands, cycling brands, whether that be an apparel brand, whether that be somebody who manufactures bicycles, I think you need to diversify your marketing team, because they're all cultural differences when we start talking about tapping into different customer segmentations, right? So you might have 75% of cyclists who are white that buy your bike. They speak a different language or whatever it is, like whatever is cool to them might not be cool to black cyclists. So you need somebody on your team who understands the culture of that demographic. Just like if you want to tap into the Hispanic community. And I think from that aspect, once you have that, then you'll have brands that are actually developing marketing campaigns to communicate to these demographics and show them that it's something that is cool or something that maybe they should consider for whether that be racing, exercising, whatever it is. Because you have to think, like, I think there is 12 million cyclists in America. If African Americans make up 9%, that's about 10 million people you're not talking to.
That's a massive.
That's group. A massive mark, you know.
Yeah.
And for me, the cycling industry is struggling right now to sell bikes. You know, I think brands have to actually have some internal dialogue. It's like, how can we grow our market share? Have we even tried to communicate with this customer demographic? If not, how can we do this?
9% market share to grab.
Right. Yeah. And I'm not saying every single one of those millions of people is going to want to buy a $5,000 road bike, but if we don't even try, they're definitely not going to buy the road bike. So I think you have to start developing an understanding of how can we, again, it has to be a desire first to reach this new market segment, and then develop a marketing campaign to connect with these people. Me personally, I promote the bicycle as an option because I know, as a former hooper, somebody who played basketball, I know how it feels to play something my entire life and then all of a sudden it's gone and now I'm overweight. I'm not the only one who has experienced this. So if there is a person who plays basketball or who played basketball, they're black like me, maybe they're not into running, maybe they have never thought about cycling. Now, they may or may not see my content, get inspired by it. I mean, I have friends who have started riding because they started seeing me riding. Like, so, and he has a Cervelo. So it's like the black community does have expendable income as well. And then I think Hispanics is like 7% of cyclists in America. So again, we're talking about millions of other people. So just from a business standpoint, like if we have more customers, we're going to make more money, even if it's not really like, I know everybody feels differently about the DEI push, but even if you put that to a side, how can we make more money? We need to get new customers. So how can we acquire new customers, right?
Because if you're thinking, I'm thinking about it right now, you know, marketing in general, it's a lot of white people.
Yeah.
Mostly white people. I know you've been doing some shoots here and there. You know, and then, but that's, to me, if it's like, it's pretty cool if something is different, you know?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Are there, in your vision, are there like brands or people who do it well and do it good?
I think in 2020, in America, we saw a lot of more open-mindedness to brands trying to communicate with the black community. This was after the George Floyd murder.
Yeah.
And then there was a pullback. So I haven't really seen anybody do it well because I haven't really seen brands try. I mean, yeah, I've been a part of shoots, and I've seen other black cyclists who are a part of a shoot here and there, but I haven't seen really an investment in like establishing a long-term marketing campaign in different demographics. I'm speaking toward black people because I'm black, but like I haven't seen any marketing campaigns on Hispanic cyclists or Asian cyclists. I've met Asian cyclists before. I've met Hispanic cyclists before. Why are companies not trying to do any research on how to communicate with these demographics? And I think, again, it starts, like I'm saying, it starts with the desire, and then you need to have qualified people on your marketing team who understand the different cultural nuances of these demographics and try to communicate with them to get them to buy whatever it is you're selling. And like going back to what we said, I said, even if you're not trying to wrap this in a DEI bow, it like pushing that to a side, it's still good business to try to reach these new customers.
Interesting thing to think about.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it's a great opportunity for the industry if they want to try and capture it, because look, I love cycling, you know, it's changed my life literally. So I'm saying this from a place of like, I want to see the sport grow, because it can grow, but we need people who are open-minded to try new things. And I don't know if the button pushers, so to speak, are ready to do that. Yeah. So
food for thought.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. I think we're coming towards the end of our recording of the podcast. I've got a couple of questioners from the Instagram followers.
Interesting. Okay.
We have been, you know, talking about it already a little bit, so it can be some repetition. But first one is, access is huge in cycling, from equipment costs to like safe riding environments, these kind of things. What are some of the biggest barriers you've seen that prevent black youth from getting into cycling?
I would say like the barrier of entry is the finance. I'll use myself as an example. If I was in my childhood, my mom worked 2 to 3 jobs. If I had gone to my mom and said, hey, I want to get into cycling, can you buy me this road bike that's $3,000? That's a non-starter. But that's the reality for a lot of people in the States or around the world. So it's kind of like, I would like to see, I don't know if it's possible because I'm not on the inside, right? I don't know what the margins are on the products, but if it's possible to make like a bare bones bicycle point of entry, maybe use an aluminum frame even, just so that people can get on the bike. But then we also have to do the same thing with clothes, helmets, or maybe there's a non-profit organization that is able to redistribute used apparel, or maybe a platform that starts for selling used apparel so that people can just literally just get into the sport and get on the bike and start riding. Mm-hmm. That's one thing that I would help people in general. I mean, because there are people, of course, in the black community, who don't have excess income, but there's also people who do have expendable income. So again, that goes to really understanding what is your product and who are we trying to reach with this widget, basically.
If someone listening is feeling stuck, unhealthy, or uninspired, what would you want to say to them?
I've been there before. I would say try different things. Like, just because it's your reality right now doesn't mean it has to be your reality for forever. You can always start something new, change. Just like the physician told me, like, you haven't found your thing yet, whatever it is that gets you excited to exercise. And maybe it's going to be lifting weights. Maybe it's going to be running on the treadmill, which I hate, but maybe you're into it. You know what I mean? Maybe trail running is for you. Maybe cycling is for you. Maybe rollerblading is for you. You know, rollerblading for exercise is a thing. I always try to, like, I'm into cycling, I'm into running, but my thing is trying to motivate people, just do something that involves movement. because, like I said earlier, movement is scientifically proven to improve your mood. So I would just say, you know, try to dabble in different things. And if you're the type of person that likes to socialize, maybe do things that involve a community or a club, run club, whatever it is. I think, what's that new sports called, like High Rocks. Yes, that's a new thing.
That's
too.
A big thing. Yeah, for sure.
So just try different things and
And lastly, how would you complete this sentence? Cycling has given me,
ooh man, a lot. But I would say like hope, I guess. Like I said, it changed my life physically, mentally, emotionally. So like, yeah, it's given me a lot. Relationships, I met a lot of people, see a lot of places. I mean, and then you experience the bike. I mean, when you're riding on the bike, you experience the world, I feel like, differently than you would if you're driving in a car or walking. So it's given me a lot of things.
Cool. I think we're coming towards the end of the recording. I think we have been, let me see, already talking for 1 hour and 15 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Time flies by.
Yeah, flies by.
I really enjoyed it.
Likewise.
Thanks so much. I always like to end the podcast with one question, and it's the following. What is the one thing you would want to say to your younger self?
Oh, man. My younger self, that's a good one. I would just say, like, the sky's the limit. You can achieve anything that you set your mind on, that you're determined about, that you're resilient. I think that applies to anybody, not just my younger self. Like, there's a quote, don't let other people's opinions of you become your reality. Like, if you want to do something, chart down how you can achieve that goal in baby steps and knock out one thing at a time. And before you know it, you'll achieve it.
Before you know it, you're living for 2 years in Spain already.
Exactly. Yes. Yes.
All right, man. Well, again, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
It's been a real pleasure to get to know you a little bit. I mean, yeah. As I told you, I've seen you around in the last couple of years, and there are a lot of people in Girona, a lot of people doing sports, but still, you can run into each other and have a chat or some, or you can like have years of not talking to each other.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
It's been really nice to get to know you a little bit, and
likewise,
might need to get some time on a bike together.
Yeah, definitely.
Somewhere.
And then I'll be asking you for some running tips soon,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, exactly. All right, thanks so much for the time. This was Great Grand Girona, and see you guys in the next one.
1, 2, 3, 4
This podcast is brought to you by the Dutch media platform Triathlon Inside.